From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Friday, July 18, 1969, in the waters off Chappaquiddick Island, Massachusetts. Senator Ted Kennedy was driving late at night with a single passenger, 28-year-old Mary Jo Kopechne, who had worked for the late Robert Kennedy. Kennedy, Ted, was hosting a party for a group of women who had previously worked for his brother, but it remains unclear how exactly Ted Kennedy ended up in a car with just one of them. As you probably know, Kennedy crashed the car off a wooden bridge. He was able to swim to safety. Mary Jo Kopechne died. What exactly happened in the minutes and hours that followed has been subject to intense debate and analysis for decades. And now a new film explores the incident and its many layers. The film is called Chappaquiddick. I've had a chance to see it, and it is a remarkable film. The director happens to be from Pittsburgh. It's John Kern. He is back in town for a sold-out screening tonight, and then the film officially opens on Friday. He is our guest in studio. And John, it's great to have you. How are you?
Hey, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Well, I would let you know where to go tonight, but you can't get in. It is sold out. So you're going to have to start on Friday with the film Chappaquiddick, which is out. And I want to start just by asking you how it got on your radar in the first place. I mean, some people may have an assumption about what this film will be, the message behind it, what your political leanings are. So why don't you take us through a little bit of the process of how it landed on your desk?
It got sent to me by Jason Clark's manager. Jason plays Ted, of course. And I was very worried about it being when I heard it was about Chappaquiddick, I was very worried about it being a one-dimensional hit piece. And I was very surprised by the script. It was very nuanced, very compelling. It read like a thriller. And, I read it in 2016 in the height of the primary season. And, whatever hesitation I had about doing it, I am a Ted Kennedy fan, but I did recognize this sort of blind spot that I had about not just this incident, but Ted's, his carousing and drinking, the wild stories of Ted Kennedy you heard in the 80s and 90s. And in this season of the primaries, I just grew kind of disgusted with behavior on both sides of the aisle. And I felt it was, time to really reexamine this as part of Ted's bigger legacy.
So you were a fan of his politics, at least?
Absolutely. I mean, as much as I can be a fan of a politician, I felt that in my lifetime. I mean, I was 9 years old when Chappaquiddick happened, but, growing into the years of being more politicized, I felt that what he championed, he was on the right side of history, at least in the way that I agreed with, that doesn't mean that everything he did I admire.
And I think it's interesting that, so you're in 2016, the primaries are happening in American presidential politics. You're thinking about Chappaquiddick. You're reexamining your own biases and how they've impacted your thoughts about someone like Ted Kennedy over the years. Just a year later, the Me Too movement has really taken off. There have been a lot of people writing from the political left saying, I was wrong about Bill Clinton. If Bill Clinton's incidents with Monica Lewinsky happened, or set aside Monica Lewinsky, other things that we know about Bill Clinton, if they had happened now, that maybe he wouldn't have been or wouldn't have stayed as president. And there seems to be this moment that says political tribalism cannot push us to just excuse anything. We must be willing to say we were wrong, or this was wrong, or this should be disqualifying. It does seem to be a moment where this is happening, if not perfectly and with everybody.
Well, it should be the common denominator that unites both the left and the right. I mean, I don't think that we should turn a blind eye to behavior that we ourselves would go to jail for or be indicted for or be kicked out of office for,
Wrong is wrong.
Wrong is wrong. And I think that, we get what we vote for. And, at any given time, half the country, this film is going to be seen through two very clear prisms. Either you hate Ted Kennedy or you admire Ted Kennedy. You know what I mean? It's just the way anything political these days is very divisive. I knew that. But I think that, if you're going into this film and you're finding glee in watching, the downfall of Ted in this phase of his life, I think you can't be a hypocrite. I think you have to look at your own politicians and put that same hard eye on them.
The film is going to be released nationally on Friday, and we're talking to John Curran, the director of Chappaquiddick. Throughout this program, if you want to weigh in with what you remember about that, or if your thoughts are, have maybe evolved or changed over the years, you can call the program. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. The film stars Jason Clarke as Ted Kennedy. Kate Mara is Mary Jo Kopechne. And by the way, we'll talk a little bit more later this hour about that. Outstanding performance. And frankly, I have great appreciation for John and the writers, because Mary Jo Kopechne was not a person who was, you know, just, they were called the Boiler Room Girls. I don't like the word girls to begin with, but they gave real life and depth and substance to Mary Jo in that short role in the film, which I appreciated. Ed Helms is the conscience of the film, as Joe Gargan, which we'll talk about. Bruce Dern as Joe Kennedy. Jim Gaffigan as Paul Markham. Jim Gaffigan, a comedian in a surprise for me. I guess I shouldn't be surprised. Anybody can be a great actor, but he was outstanding. So just a lot of outstanding performances. We've got some clips as we go throughout the hour. But I do want to ask, John, is it true what I've been reading, that there were some powerful forces that tried to get this film blocked from being released?
Yeah, I mean, really, Byron Allen, who's, you know, runs, it's his company that's distributing this. I mean, he was contacted, and he should really comment on that. Cause to me, it just adds to, like, gossip and innuendo. But of course, you know, like there's been comments on record from people trying to, you know, dismiss it and whatnot. And me personally, no.
Okay, and what about the Kennedy family, estate, anything directly from them on this?
Only in articles where they've released a statement, but we weren't contacted by anybody, and they didn't try to shut it down or anything like that. No.
Did you expect to be?
No, I didn't really. I worried. I was determined to shoot on Chappaquiddick. I wanted it's such a specific geographical environment there. You know, the look of the island, the bridge, the roads, the famous intersection, the ferry. I worried about getting pushback shooting on it on Chappaquiddick and Martha's Vineyard. And surprisingly, they were really welcoming. And, you know, it's 50 years ago this happened, so it's a big part of their history.
So before we really start to work through it, I do want to ask you what your ultimate goal was here. Here's how the Smithsonian Magazine characterized the film. They said the drama was the perfect subject for a film about the disposability of women, the impossible expectations of the Kennedy family, how power gets abused, and the role of the media in hiding or exposing political scandal. That's Smithsonian Magazine. I'd like to know what the director thinks you'd like to have viewers walk out with.
That was pretty good.
That was pretty good?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was, it was trying to, I wanted a balancing act. You know, I didn't want to do a partisan piece. I wanted it to be right down the middle in terms of its objectivity and draw as much from the facts as I possibly could. And that, you know, never ends all the way through the process of writing, shooting it, editing it, scoring it. You know, I was constantly taking things out and putting things back in because it was tipping too hard into one direction or the other. But to try to get it to the end where the viewer has probably as many questions as they've received answers, that was my objective with it. There's only two people that really know what happened that night, and they're both dead. And there's been a lot of variations and versions of the truth. So the film tries to capture that evolving story.
Can I ask you what you would ask Ted Kennedy if you could sit down with him now, having thought so much about?
I mean, directly about this?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have expected an answer, but I think the big question was how much was he drinking? There's a witness that saw him in the car, so we knew he was in the car at a time that was probably an hour after he claimed to be there. I think that has a big bearing on why he delayed reporting the accident.
We're talking to John Curran, director of Chappaquiddick, and I want to talk a little bit about Mary Jo Kopechne. I thought Kate Mara was outstanding. And I suspect you feel the same.
Yeah.
This was not a role that's going to be on screen for very long, because obviously we know what's going to happen to Mary Jo, but you still found time to give some substance. This was a woman who had real achievements and accomplishments. You know, she was not just sort of a prop for a campaign, or shouldn't have been disposable. What did you want viewers to take away when they thought about Mary Jo?
Well, she was sort of relegated in history to, you know, a blonde secretary. Yeah. I mean, the headline the day after this happened was Teddy Escapes, Blonde Drowns. I mean, that's how insignificant she was. And you can Google that. I mean, that's the primary headline of the paper the next day. And I, you know, when you dig into who she was, I mean, they were called the Boiler Room Girls. It was 69 and, you know, different probably connotations back then. But they were all very educated, very ambitious, very smart women, and they were an integral part of Bobby's campaign in 68. And Mary Jo particularly was very level-headed. She wasn't a party girl. She went to a Catholic school, Catholic college. She worked with the underprivileged when she got out of college. I mean, she had a real career arc going and, you know, was loved Bobby Kennedy and came on his campaign. And I felt with the film that even though we do lose her very soon into the film, I wanted to know who she was. And I felt Kate embodied the Mary Jo I had in my head after studying who she was.
I don't know today where the Kopechne family stands or
they've passed away.
Sure, but I don't know if there are any sort of relatives or descendants.
There are.
And did you expect to hear from them on this film?
We did. Yeah. We did. They reached out to see the film. The producer screened it for, I believe, her aunt and cousins. And I think, look, they still have questions, and they're still very bitter about how the parents were treated, they felt. And I think they very much, I mean, they're in articles saying they very much appreciate the film. I haven't spoken to any of them directly, but I've just read their comments, and they're generally positive. I think there's, you know, like the rest of us, they still wonder about certain things.
Sure. And there are scenes in the film that made me almost viscerally angry, and of course made me scramble to kind of do my own digging to say, wait a second. Did this really happen this way? What made me angriest is she could have lived. That I think we know enough to at least draw the conclusion that when this car crash happened, the car goes off the bridge into the water. I don't think it's still totally clear to me how Ted Kennedy got out of the car, but he gets out of the car, and all we have is his account on, did you go back and try to save her?
That's correct.
Okay, so we're never really going to know that. I think we all agree on that.
Yeah.
But what we also know is that he passes at least four homes. One was 150 yards away.
That's in the film?
Yep.
That same house?
Exactly. It's the same house?
Yep.
Wow.
I mean, it's literally one. I did it in one shot because I wanted to show the kid running. When he sees the car the next morning, he runs to the house, and I kept it in one shot with a pan. You can see that it's
how quickly you could have been there.
Yeah, it's a 100-yard dash the kid does. That's
exactly
it.
Exactly. And so we know that he passed that home, several others, didn't stop, didn't knock on a door, didn't ask the first person he saw, the first home he came to. And maybe the assumption that, yeah, I think at one point in that incident, as we're seeing in the movie Chappaquiddick, Kennedy says she's already dead, or she's,
yeah.
Okay, so in his mind, she's in the car. The car's in the water. She didn't get out. She's got to be dead.
Yeah, I mean, it even if you go by his testimony, when the car hit the water, he struggled for like 20-25 minutes to try to get into the car. There's a current there. It's absolutely pitch black. I've been out there at night. There's no ambient light, so. You know, even if you were sober, it's very disorienting to go underwater with a strong current. It's a tidal current because it's a pond. And you can't see a thing. And the car is upside down. By his account, he tried for about, 20-25 minutes. Then he walked 20-25 minutes back to the mile and a half back to the party. They came back and they dove for, you know, another half an hour or something like that. By that point, I think it's fair to say that they all assumed that she had drowned, that it was a recovery, not a rescue. But that's going by their account, I mean, which is what they all testified to.
And what is really heartbreaking is that There is at least, do you agree, there's enough evidence to assume that she maybe did, according to that one of the divers who said she could have been alive for a couple of hours because there was an air pocket.
Yeah, the diver I did speak to, and he's been on record since day one,
yep.
that, you know, he found her. And he's the sort of person that's so by the book, I think he's a very credible witness. And he sketched how he found her immediately after the accident. And, you know, she was holding herself up, her head out of a, you know, out of water. Well, the pocket was gone by then, the air pocket. But she was absolutely in a position where she was holding herself up, her face pressed to the what would have been the floorboards of the car. And when they got her out and the medical examiner arrived, they pumped her stomach and kind of like a, you know, a few teaspoons of water came out, suggesting that she didn't drown. And there was foam around her nostrils and lips, which is evidence of suffocation. So by all accounts of the people that were there, even though the medical exam declared that she had died from drowning, it appeared she had suffocated.
Joel writes to the program and says, how did she die? So you're hearing from John. Suffocation, probably not drowning. Suffocation when you run out of...
Officially drowning, but anecdotal evidence and by the testimony of the other people, suffocation.
And that suffocation would happen when you have an enclosed air pocket and you essentially run out of good air. Joel says, was it that he could swim and she couldn't? Did he just abandon her and save himself? What's the answer that you would give to that?
Well, there was three windows that got blown out, or two got blown out. I think Teddy's was down. I'm assuming that he got out by the open window on the driver's side. She was thrown into the back seat and then found the car was at a 45 degree angle to the bottom, so that the headlights were on the bottom practically, and the back of the car was angled up. It's about 12 feet of water. And she, you know, she could swim, but I can't answer why she didn't struggle and try to get out one of the open windows. I can't answer what his rescue attempts were, or, you know, why he couldn't get in, whether he knocked on the car and she knocked. I mean, these things we just don't know. We have to go by Ted's account because he's the only one that lived.
And so what we are left with in the film is not the idea that Ted Kennedy didn't care if Mary Jo Kopechne died, but that he made choices that served to first protect himself and his career. That he, and starting, by the way, with before the car even crashes, when he notices a police officer, right?
That's right. I mean, just by sheer coincidence, the T intersection, where if you go to the left, it goes to the ferry. If you go to the right, it goes to the bridge. He hits that T intersection at the exact same moment. A cop is driving up from the ferry. He had been chaperoning a dance in Edgartown, and he was coming home about 12:45. The car passed in front of the cop's headlights and then pulled into like a little dirt lane and hid. And the cop rounded the corner, stopped, got out, and said that he thought maybe the car was in trouble, so he called out to it and started walking towards the car, thinking they were lost. And the car, he had seen a man behind the wheel and another woman, and he couldn't tell if there was someone in the back seat or not. The car backed up and then peeled off and took off down the dirt road. And the dirt road to the bridge is only about a mile and a half. So my guess is that in trying to escape from the cop, because maybe he was drinking and he had a young woman and that was unmarried in the car, and of course he was married, he was trying to get away. And, you know, Ted had been nailed a few times in college for taking off from cops. He had been drinking and driving or speeding. And, you know, he was caught a few times trying to evade a cop, like turning into a lane and turning off his headlights, that kind of thing. So it's not inconceivable that that's what he was doing on this night.
Listeners, if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. The new film is called Chappaquiddick. It is out in theaters on Friday, and the director is John Curran, back in his hometown, so to speak, of Pittsford and Rochester, and that's why he's in studio with us. By the way, what is your Rochester-Pittsford connection?
I moved here in 1970, went to Sutherland High School, graduated 78, And I then went to Syracuse and ended up moving to Australia for, you know, 15 years to LA. And then my wife, who's also from Pittsburgh, we just made a decision to come home because I was doing a film in China and figured it was time to, you know, come back home and be around relatives. And that few years turned into now.
Kathy writes to the program and says, it might very well be a good film, but isn't this just reopening old wounds? When are we allowed to finally heal?
Heal what? I'm not quite sure I understand the question. Heal.
So let's say Kathy's first question. Doesn't this reopen old wounds?
Well, there's never been a film about this. And I would say right now in this political climate, this is very much a time to re-examine something that's never really been examined properly. And I think that comment is how I felt. You know, when the script was sent to me, I thought, oh, Chappaquiddick, you know, like, I'm not sure I want to be a part of this, because I knew that there's no good way of telling this story. You know, there's no positive version of it that helps Ted Kennedy. So yeah, it is opening an old wound, but I would say that it's coming out at a time where there feels like there's a lot more courage about re-examining these things honestly, and they need to be re-examined honestly.
So in some ways, this is a statement about political tribalism. And would you like to see people of all political stripes be willing to re-examine things?
Yeah, I mean, I it seems bizarre to me that, you know, an accident that happened 50 years ago, and Teddy has been dead now for
almost 10
years, yeah, that we still have comments like that, that it's such a it's so sensitive and raw, such a raw nerve. As a director, how can I not do that film if it provokes that kind of an emotional response, you know? But, it's certainly, to me, you know, and I've had people on both sides of the aisle see the film, and so I'm very confident in saying that it is a balanced view of this accident. It isn't a one-dimensional hit piece. And, you know, I am left-leaning, and I do expect my friends on the right to be taking a hard look at their candidate and the obvious flaws that I see. I think we have to be the same with our own heroes and candidates.
Well, I mentioned that I think the conscience of this film is Ed Helms. Ed Helms is someone that listeners will know from mostly comedic roles, whether it's Hangover, The Office, many others. But I don't want to sell him short because, number one, his dramatic performance in this, I am not a member of the Academy. I mean, this is an Oscar worthy supporting
role. He's very good, yeah.
He is fabulous. Tell the listeners who he plays in this.
He plays Joe Gargan, who is Teddy's cousin. And Joe Gargan and Ann Gargan, their mother was Rose Kennedy's sister. And both of their parents died when they were young. And Joe Kennedy essentially adopted Joe Gargan, which is, you know, a wonderful thing to do. Joey essentially became Teddy's sort of... because Teddy was the youngest, he sort of kept an eye on Teddy and became ultimately his fix-it guy, his advance man, so to speak. But Joey was also an accomplished lawyer in his own right. Joey, after this incident, was somewhat disgusted with the whole affair and eventually became estranged from the Kennedy family in around like 72, something like that.
And there are several scenes, and I want to listen to one right now if we could. The incident has happened, and at this point in the film, there is a discussion that Ted Kennedy is having with a number of people close to him about essentially how can he move forward? What kind of statement could he put out? What could he do in regards to the death of Mary Jo Kopechne that would allow him to preserve his potential presidential ambitions, his future career? And they're working on that. So you're going to hear first the voice of Jason Clark, who plays Ted Kennedy. You'll hear some interaction with some of the other people in the room with him. And then the scene concludes with Ed Helms as Joe Gargan interjecting. Let's listen.
This country has a deep connection to the Kennedy name, and that is a valuable thing, gentlemen. We can't just let that go to waste. We need to remind the American people what this family has been through and how much more we have left to achieve.
And how are you planning on doing that, Ted?
A nationally televised statement. All three networks, prime time.
Is that all? Why not have Ted fill in for Carson on The Tonight Show?
It's actually not a bad idea. The networks will donate the time if it's part of their news coverage.
We could frame the national conversation the way we want it framed.
How do we do that?
He's got to look sympathetic.
It'd be easier to get him to fill in for Carson.
We tell the truth, or at least our version of it. And it ends with an appeal to the voters, to the people that elected me. We need to remind them that this family perseveres, that we don't back down from a fight, that we don't get backed into a corner. We have a true compass and we follow it. Now, I followed mine the best I could that night. And me and Paul and Joe, we did everything we could to save that poor girl.
You got a winner there, son.
Amen to that,
son.
Yes.
Son of a bitch, that's sorry, a hell of a winner.
Not bad at all.
We get Swanson's speech up. We'll use that.
If we do this right, Fenway, you might be more electable.
That's good.
A girl dies, and yet somehow Ted is the martyr? Think about it. We really want to prop him up as an injured hero here?
As Joe Gargan, and that is an amazing scene to me, because what we see from there to the rest of the movie is what leads up to the speech, the roughly 11-minute speech that the nation saw.
Mm-hmm.
What did you want viewers to take from that scene, John?
It's really the beginning, you know, in the context of the film. I would say it's the first scene where Teddy takes some kind of control. He almost gets reduced to this kind of infantile state, returning back to his home. And, you know, his father has gathered a brain trust of Kennedy men, you know, and they literally just take over and start determining, you know, with their connections and whatnot, how to handle this. This scene's really Teddy putting himself forward, and then Joey calling him into check.
It was an amazing scene because, you know, the easy thing to do would be to just say, well, look at Ted the villain here, playing himself as a victim. And in some ways, I felt that, I'm sure viewers will. The balancing, or at least the nuance, is that family really did go through a lot. And he lost two brothers in the most tragic way. I'm sorry, three brothers. Yeah. The most tragic way you can imagine.
And a sister, and another sister to a lobotomy. Lobotomy.
Exactly. Just amazing string of loss, so that in some very human sense, you can understand for a moment why anybody might say, boy, why me? Why us?
Hmm. Well, also, you have to remember that, I mean, it's in the beginning of the film. I really strove to put into context what was going on with Ted Kennedy in 69. I mean, it's only been a year since Bobby was killed. And he could have walked into that nomination in 68. I mean, even Eugene McCarthy would have thrown his delegates to Teddy. There was that much emotional support to keep, because Bobby was definitely building some momentum. He had just won California when he was shot. In 69, the world, certainly the nation, expected Teddy to run in 72, and he probably would have won had he not had Chappaquiddick.
We're talking to John Kern, the director of Chappaquiddick, and we're going to get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back. We've got another clip coming up a little bit later this hour as we get toward that dramatic moment where Ted Kennedy gave that speech to the country. All of which, by the way, there were so many different things that were so fascinating that the film brought back, either reminded you or, like me, maybe you weren't quite sentient at the time that this all happened, but the moon landing is happening. There's so many things happening that in some ways might have been fortunate for Ted Kennedy. So the film is Chappaquiddick. It is out Friday. You can see it starting on Friday. John Kern, the director, is here, and we're coming right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, how do doctors communicate with patients? Well, some of us think not very well. And that can certainly be improved in a lot of cases. Patients don't feel like there's a lot of time, a lot of direct face-to-face time with doctors. There's a lot of pressure. There are questions about what doctors can and can't say at certain moments. We're going to discuss that kind of communication next hour on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I want to appeal directly to listeners who are left-leaning with their politics, and I want to ask if your thoughts about Chappaquiddick have evolved and changed over the years. What comes to mind when you hear the word Chappaquiddick? Will you see the film? And what do you think about Senator Ted Kennedy? Should he have stayed in office? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Dana writes to the program. It's connections, by the way, at WXXI.org. You can email me, but the easiest way to get to the show is connections at WXXI.org. And Dana says, Evan, can you please ask the director if he also plans a film about President Trump's scandals? Chappaquiddick was almost 50 years ago. I still haven't seen a movie about Donald Trump's many affairs and scandals. John?
Look, I said at the beginning of the program, I'm a Democrat, and I read the script in the primary season, and I was appalled at the rise of Donald Trump. And it was bizarre to me that people were looking at him on the right through a very selective sort of set of lenses. And it's very easy to throw, you know, lob bombs on that side and call people hypocrites and whatnot. But that it's low hanging fruit to do something that's happening right now. It doesn't really resonate. There will be a miniseries on Donald Trump, and with the benefit of hindsight, and it will be I cannot see anything except a tragic comedy, and it will be made, and I'd love to make it. But you know, I also think that, to Evan's point, that this tribalism thing is very destructive. And I think that whether you're on the left or the right, it's, you know, we all should be united in taking a hard look at our candidates and being honest about them, warts and all, and expecting, you know, something, hold them to higher standards, or at least standards that we expect from ourselves.
Bruce Dern plays the Kennedy father, who is, I think fair to say, he's dying at this point, and ends up in reality, he died just a few months after Chappaquiddick, I think. But there is a scene I wanted to ask you about, because Bruce Dern plays a Kennedy patriarch who can barely talk at this point in his life. How many words do you have in the movie? So like five words or something?
Five, yeah, if that. I mean, Joe was very incapacitated by a couple strokes a couple years after. No, before John passed away. I think it was a year before JFK was assassinated, he had his first big stroke. He really could say about one or two words. So we take dramatic license in giving him four words or five, whatever it is.
Yeah, okay. So there's a scene where Ted goes to see his dad and asks for a private moment with his father. And in that moment, a couple of things I want to ask you about how much we know to be true or how much is sort of a conjecture or extrapolated. Ted says to his father in that scene in the movie, I never wanted to be president. I wanted to be great. Can we confidently say that Ted might have said that with sincerity, that he never wanted to be president?
Oh, he's been on record saying that he didn't want to be president.
But do you believe it as a director?
Do I believe that he didn't want to be president? I believe that he's very conflicted about it after Bobby was shot. Absolutely. You know, I mean, look, this is, he's a human being. You know, he's the youngest of a famous set of brothers who were all killed in the line of duty. And he's supposed to step into those shoes. It's very Shakespearean in that regard in terms of a drama. But in real life, he was 36, 37 years old at the time. And the expectation on him, and by all accounts, you read where he was at that point in his life, he wasn't sure that he wanted to be president. So, you know, obviously any film is going to dramatize historical events. And I don't claim this to be, I mean, even if I was trying to make it, an accurate documentary, it would still be my version. It'd be my impression of the truth. But I can confidently say that Teddy was absolutely not sure about being president at this point in his life.
So he says to his father, what I want to be is, I want to be a great man. And Bruce Dern, as Joe Kennedy, grabs him essentially by the face and then is able to grumble out the words, you will never be great. And it's a devastating moment. Do we know enough about the dynamic of their relationship to think that that could have happened, or in some way, whether it happened exactly as the scene shows in the movie, that there was that kind of tension?
You know, what you do with a film is you're trying to, you're trying to capture the essence of a dynamic. I mean, obviously, I can't say, oh, absolutely, that this would have been the exchange they would have had at this point in their life. But I can say that Teddy certainly can, you know, disappointed his father a number of times with the law. He cheated on a test in Harvard and got kicked out. He's, you know, he was the youngest, and a lot of the attention was on the older brothers. And I think that his father supported all of his kids equally, but I don't think he had the same faith in Ted that he had in Bobby and John and certainly Joe. I mean, Joe was really the hero of the family growing up.
Sure, and really the hero of the film. So he walks out of Ted Kennedy walks out of that scene with his dad, bumps into Joe Gargan, and tells Joe, Joe's ready to leave. Joe's ready to basically say, I'm not doing this. I can't be part of your nationally televised statement where you're inventing details or sort of making yourself the victim that Mary Jo Kopechne died here. And Ted says, no, I want you to write my resignation. And Ed Helms, as Joe Gargan, says, okay, yeah, that I can do. What we do know from history is that there was at least a lot of speculation that a resignation that night was possible. Do we know enough to think that he really did have it drafted, John?
That I couldn't tell you, but I would say absolutely they had drafted a resignation speech. That's all they were doing while they were holed up in Hyannisport was covering their options. But I think that Teddy was adamant that the voters have a voice, but that ultimately he would make the choice. So, and I think that the response was overwhelmingly positive and
to his
supportive
speech.
To his speech in terms of Massachusetts.
Okay. Well,
the rest of the country, not so much.
And this is why, by the way, why the film ends on a masterful note, which we'll get to in a moment. But let's get to that scene with Ed Helms as Joe Gargan and Jason Clark as Ted Kennedy. Now, this is just 2 minutes before Ted Kennedy is to go on and give his nationally televised address detailing his thoughts on Chappaquiddick, what happened leading to the death of Mary Jo Kopechne. And Ed Helms shows up in the movie at that scene. Joe thinks Ted's about to go on and resign. I've got the statement. Here it is. And this is where Ted lets Joe know, you know, I don't think I'm going to do that. Let's listen to the scene.
Joey, we both have flaws, do we not?
Okay, live in 2 minutes.
Yeah, of course we do. We all do.
Right. Right, I thought that myself.
What's right is here in front of you.
I don't know what's right anymore.
Joey, let's wrap things up.
Ted, I didn't say this before, but I agree with you. The Kennedys do have a true compass, and it's because you're following yours that we're here right now. You told the police that you were driving. You told the truth. You had me write this resignation.
Sorensen's speech.
Sorensen's speech is bull. Every word of it, he made it up. All the thoughts and emotions. I was there. I've been there with you from the very beginning.
This may give me a chance at a new beginning.
This isn't about opportunity. It's about integrity.
1 minute, Joey.
Joey, you have flaws. We all do. You said so yourself. Moses had a temper. Peter betrayed Jesus. I have Chappaquiddick.
Yeah. Moses had a temper, but he never left a girl at the bottom of the Red Sea.
That's a powerhouse line right there.
Yeah.
Powerhouse line. And I'm, again, just want to get your thoughts as a director, knowing that we don't know that that kind of an exchange happened in real life. But you're comfortable putting it in there because what do you want to leave
that exchange,
it?
That line from Ted, Moses had a temper.
Yeah.
That's taken from a journalist that in defense of Ted laid out what this incident would ultimately be. And we've used that as dialogue. You know, when you're doing a film, I mean, Joe Gargan, as you said in the beginning, he's emblematic of Ted's better conscience. And you know, you follow that path, and that's kind of what he played in life. But then, you know, you dramatize that dynamic. So, you know, that exchange is, we tried wherever possible to pull dialogue from real conversations around this event. So that's where that exchange came from.
Let me go ahead and get a phone call from David in Rochester. Go ahead, David.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
John, just wanted to say hi to you. You don't know if you remember me, but we owned a very successful paint contracting business in high school.
SNR Painting.
Yes, yes. And only you and I was initials before.
Shab and Reshab, if my memory's right. Correct. How you doing, Dave?
Good. I'm doing well. I just wanted to say hi, and it's nice to have you home and doing all this good work. As you know, I'm driving along, I hear comments about the movie and whether it's, bad behavior by a Democrat and bad behavior by a Republican. Why don't we, do a movie on this or that? And I'm just wondering your thoughts about more, it's more a function of men in power and, egos and that type of mentality driving the kind of the womanizing behavior.
That's exactly, David. That's exactly, that's a bipartisan problem. Men abusing power, particularly abusing women, using their power to abuse women. There shouldn't be a political side that forgives that behavior, So it's something that should transcend a political party. And, that's a big reason that I took on the film, is that for me, just to keep looking for stories on this subject that attacked a right-wing person, it doesn't solve the issue for me. I do recognize that there's a level of hypocrisy there that I have to confront. And as a filmmaker, this story, it was bizarre to me that it still felt like a raw wound this many years after the fact. So I do think that in the context of the movements that are out there and happening, it felt like the right time.
Yeah, right. I mean, it'd be interesting to just do a study about that type of behavior across lines. I mean,
industries. I mean, it doesn't.
And industries, yeah. And and religion. It's just, I think the larger picture is being lost. Anybody who seeks power, it's got to be, you have to have an ego to do that. And this is part of feeding that, maybe. But anyways, I'm looking forward to seeing the movie, and I'm in town here, and maybe we can bump into each other.
Yeah, sure. Look forward to catching up, Dave. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for the phone call. And by the way, Dave and everybody else can see the film starting Friday. Chappaquiddick hits theaters starting on Friday. The director, John Curran, is with me in studio for the remainder of this hour now. And, David brought up a couple things I just want to touch on briefly here. Number one, I watched Chappaquiddick and found myself thinking, it bothers me that in modern American politics, if you are a Democrat or if you are a Republican, that will determine how you view Chappaquiddick. It'll determine how you view whether somebody should resign from office. It determines whether different scandals get viewed in different prisms. And this is a movie is kind of a call to us, I think, to set aside that political tribalism and say right is right, wrong is wrong. And to David's point, men in power in particular have all kinds of advantage. This movie is rife with that. If you will, go back and watch Ted Kennedy's actual speech. So after the film, of course, I went and watched the original, too, because I want to see how close it looks to Jason Clark. How much of the original 11-minute speech, the national address that he gave, is in the film? It's a lot of it.
It's a good chunk of it. His version of the night particularly is in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And his apology to the parents and his denials. There's a few beats and paragraphs that we left out, but the gist of it definitely is in there. And then the appeal to the American people, to the voters.
If you go back and watch, and it's easy to find on YouTube, the full 11 minutes, there's a few moments in there where even Ted Kennedy's own words, where he's talking about girls, not women, he's talking about men who have the positions of power. I mean, it wasn't even 50 years ago, but certainly as the Smithsonian Magazine pointed out, women as disposable.
And also to use that part of that national speech to deny rumors. I mean, there wasn't actually any actual charges to that, but to make sure that, you know, he sort of dismissed her as just someone that he knew through his brother, you know.
Yeah. And so here is CJ then sending an email, interesting email from a listener named CJ, who says, I think that we need to learn to separate out the humanity and attendant failings of people willing to serve and their abilities to govern, to negotiate, to plan, to compromise where necessary to get the work done. If we expect angels, who among us could serve? If we excuse all behavior, do we get legislation? Isn't there a difference between ill choices, even gross errors, and graft, greed, malfeasance? What can we require in our elected officials?
Well, CJ, here's my line. You know, maybe it's all subjective, but if it's something that I'm going to go, that I would go to jail for, they should get out of office. You know, I think that's a very fair line, that they shouldn't be given a pass for behavior that the rest of us would be penalized for. That's my line. I don't know what yours is, you know, but I think we all have to kind of determine. I understand what you're saying, that, you know, we should be able to separate the personal from the public. But, you know, it is, we are talking about character. And I think we should hold politicians to a higher standard.
I actually think there's two separate, and they don't perfectly overlap, two ideas that maybe CJ is looking at versus maybe what Chappaquiddick in the film does, which is, I think, CJ, every person's going to have a different line. You know, did you cheat on a test in college? Did you lift a speech that you made at some point? Did you have an affair? Did you shoplift? Certain things are going to be deal breakers for some people. But Chappaquiddick is about a woman who ended up dead, who, number one, probably shouldn't have died. I mean, it looks like they could have saved her if the person who was driving the car that crashed off the bridge was more concerned immediately and only for her safety, and not for her safety, but also for his reputation and status. And you're going to go to jail for that. And when the judge decided, well, what did the judge say? That you've already suffered enough and you will suffer enough in the future.
You know, it wasn't just the judge. I mean, part of the story that interested me was the ever-growing circle of complicity that built around Teddy. You know, and that included really the Kopechnys. They could have ordered an autopsy that would have shed light on a lot of questions. But they're very Catholic, and they didn't want to exhume the body. And the local DA is on record, the special prosecutor is on record, the chief of police is on record. They're all Kennedy Democrats. They didn't want to prosecute him. So, you know, all the way around, people were involved in just letting this thing slide. It wasn't just Ted and his henchmen, you know?
Yeah, and so here's Harry real quick. He says, have an incredible show. Does the guest think that politics has changed away from tribalism and with the internet after the television age? So,
I don't think so. I would think probably the opposite. I think we're kind of witnessing, I mean, I suppose it's always, you know, the country's always been divided to a degree, and it will continue to be. But I think that there's, with the internet and the ephemeral kind of news cycles, you know, on an hourly, daily basis, that people are just, it's louder and more in your face constantly.
And so let me wrap with this, with John Kern. And again, Chappaquiddick, the film in theaters starting on Friday. You know, John, you close the film with this montage, kind of the man on the street. What did voters and what did people think of Ted Kennedy's big speech? There was a moment in the speech that made me kind of ill. And that's the moment where Ted Kennedy says, you know, I've wondered, maybe there is a curse over our family. When you think about all the loss and the tragedy in the Kennedy family, especially with his siblings, there were tragedies. Chappaquiddick wasn't something that happened to Ted Kennedy. Mm. Chappaquiddick is something that Ted Kennedy did, and it led to somebody else dying. And for him to invoke a curse as if he was an innocent bystander made me a little ill. But your montage at the end with the voters, it worked.
Well, I think Teddy was cursed, but I think his curse, unlike his brother's, was to survive. You know, Teddy survived a plane crash in the mid-60s. He did some crazy stuff in his life and survived it. And he survived Chappaquiddick, which is probably in some way a curse for him. It certainly defined the rest of his life. But those interviews, I happened to find those through a researcher. And, you know, it's a guy on the street from CBS interviewing people the day after that national speech. And it's crazy. Like, I had 40 minutes of it, and the guy finally turned in frustration to his cameraman and said, like, is there anyone in Boston that isn't a Teddy Kennedy fan? Because he couldn't find anybody to say something negative about him. And the few people that did are in my film. So, you know, it's very interesting.
It's a very powerful film. I want to congratulate you and everyone
Thank
behind
you.
It. And maybe strange to say, almost 50 years later, it is timely and important. We examine what tribalism means and how to sort of guard against that and learn from that. John Kern is the director of Chappaquiddick in theaters on Friday. And it's nice to have you back home in your home digs. Nice to talk to you here.
Thanks. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. Short break. More Connections coming up.